This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The transmission of light, case one, Shakyamuni. In our weekly discussion group this year, we will go through all the cases in this text that was assembled by Kazon, the third generation Soto lineage of Dogens. And in my discussion group, we'll talk about who Kazon was and something about the cultural background in which he operated. But today, I want to simply read the three pages of this case and comment on it as a koan as I go. Shakyamuni Buddha realized enlightenment on seeing the morning star. He said, "I and all beings on earth together attain enlightenment at the same time." Shakyamuni left his palace one night when he was 19 years old and shaved off his hair. After that, he spent 6 years practicing ascetic exercises. Subsequently, he sat on an indestructible seat, so immobile that there were cobwebs in his brows, a bird's nest on his head, and reeds growing up through his mat. Thus he sat for 6 years. Now the first thing we're asked to consider is what is the nature of his sitting in his samadhi in those 6 years. Kazon is the descendant of Dogen, who asserted the identity of practice and enlightenment, that Zazen itself was an expression of enlightenment. So when Shakyamuni sat for 6 years, why was he not already enlightened? See, I think that to extend the metaphor of the cobwebs and the bird's nests and so forth, it's as if we picture Shakyamuni here in a cocoon, undergoing this great deepening metamorphosis, but he hasn't emerged. He's in this deep state of samadhi, so immobile. If we're to imagine he didn't move at all in 6 years, so immobile that birds could have a nest on his head. And in a way, this is a picture of a certain model of practice based on the idea of entering deep states of samadhi, right? As if what our practice is doing is trying to cultivate a particular esoteric state of consciousness. what Shakyamuni here has entered into, in one sense, is presented as very impressive, but in another sense, it's about as useless or as useful as a garden gnome. You know, he's sort of a immobile statue in the backyard. The birds can land on it. He looks very interesting, but nothing comes forth. Then in his 30th year, on the 8th day of the 12th month, he was suddenly enlightened when the morning star appeared. Then he spoke the foregoing words, his first lion's roar. And the bulk of this case is going to be an analysis of those words of Shakyamuni's. I and all beings on earth together attain enlightenment at the same time. Kazan then shows that immediately upon this realization, Shakyamuni gets up off of his seat. And he says, after that he spent 49 years helping others by teaching, never staying in seclusion. With just one robe and one bowl, he lacked nothing. He taught in over 360 assemblies, and then finally entrusted the treasury of the Eye of Truth to Kasyapa. And its transmission has continued to the present. Indeed, this is the root of the transmission and practice of the true teaching in India, China, and Japan. The behavior of Shakyamuni Buddha during his lifetime is a model for the disciples he left behind. Even though he may have had the 32 special marks of greatness and the 80 kinds of refinements, he kept the form of an old mendicant, no different from anyone else. And so when we ask about what was the nature of Shakyamuni's realization, it's inseparable from these two aspects. One, that he tirelessly spent his life teaching, and yet at the same time, he was no different from anyone else. He maintained the life of an old mendicant monk. Therefore, ever since he was in the world, through the three periods of his teaching, genuine, imitation, and derelict, those who have sought the way of his teaching have imitated the Buddha's form and manners, have used the endowment of the Buddha, and in all their doings have always considered the task of self-understanding foremost. Having been transmitted from Buddha to Buddha, from adept to adept, the true teaching has never been cut off. This story clearly points to this. Even though what the Buddha pointed out and explained in the more than 360 meetings over 49 years was not the same, the various stories, parables, metaphors, and explanations did not go beyond the principle illustrated in the story of his enlightenment. So he's saying that all of the Buddha's teaching is contained or can be revealed in the koan of that first expression. I and all beings on earth together attain enlightenment at the same time. So he's now going to try to parse that expression. That is to say, I is not Shakyamuni Buddha. Even Shakyamuni Buddha comes from this I. And it does not only give birth to Shakyamuni Buddha. All beings on earth also come from here. Just as when you lift up a net, all the holes are raised. In the same way, when Shakyamuni Buddha was enlightened, so too were all beings on earth enlightened. And it was not only all beings on earth that were enlightened. All the Buddhas of past, present, and future also attained enlightenment. While this is so, do not think of Shakyamuni Buddha as having become enlightened. Do not see Shakyamuni Buddha outside of all beings on earth. Now this and a couple more paragraphs are basically challenging over and over again the idea that enlightenment is reducible to a individual's transformation of consciousness. Right? It's not as if for 6 years Buddha sat in this deep samadhi and was in one very special state of consciousness. And then the morning star came up and suddenly he got into an even fancier and better state of consciousness. And we're going to call that enlightened, right? There's a way in which he's trying to undercut that very picture of what's going on as an individual experience. That's why he says that the I is not Shakyamuni Buddha individually, as a person. And it's what I was trying to allude to in my opening remarks this morning, saying that meditation is not something taking place inside your head. Zazen is not simply your body breathing in a certain posture, but it is something that is happening collectively. It is expressing itself collectively. However immensely diverse the mountains, rivers, land, and all the forms and appearances may be, all of them are in the eye of Buddha. And you too are standing in the eye of Buddha. And it's not simply you're standing there. The eye has become you. Buddha's eye has become everyone's whole body, each standing tall. Therefore, this clear, bright eye that spans all time should not be thought of as the people evidently hear. You are Buddha's eye. Buddha is your whole body. This being so, what do you call the principle of enlightenment? I ask you, is the Buddha enlightened with you? Are you enlightened with the Buddha? If you say you become enlightened with the Buddha, or you say the Buddha becomes enlightened with you, this is not the Buddha's enlightenment at all. Therefore, it should not be called the principle of enlightenment. See, people invariably have special experiences in sitting, but they quickly become experiences that they have had. And one might ask someone who comes into Dokken San trying to report a special experience, well, whose experience was it? And if the first word out of their mouth is, I had the experience, well, you know it's not quite complete, right? It's not that it's not real, but we can say it's they've climbed up onto a 100-foot pole. They're in this very special place, and they don't know how to come down. They're going to be very preoccupied with this new attainment, a new attribute of their own, right? But over and over again, the message we're getting here is that enlightenment has to mean something different than that, you've just personally had a special experience. Even so, I and together are neither one nor two. Your skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are all together, and the host inside the house is I. It does not have skin, flesh, bones, or marrow. It does not have gross physical or mental elements. Now that's a difficult section because identifying the I with the host inside the house is to say that the host is what brings everything forth, right? And the temptation here is to call it or some kind of essence and see it in the background as something that emanates through the body, through the mind. See, it says, this I does not have skin, flesh, bones, or marrow. Does not have gross physical or mental elements. So what is it, right? Part of the way, I would say, to understand this, or to think of the dilemma being posed here, is to think about the nature of life or consciousness. Historically, it was considered a great philosophical and even scientific problem of how could inanimate matter become alive? How could inanimate matter have consciousness? And one theory or another propose that something that's non-material had to be added in addition to the matter for there to be life or for there to be consciousness. In case of life, that was called vitalism. You know, it was the idea that there's some kind of breath or spark that literally animates matter and makes it alive, right? And that breath or spark is somehow separable from the matter, might even have an existence apart from it after death. Or the consciousness, again, is a separate state from matter. This is basic dualism, that there is matter and then there's something like mind. Right? Now this is a very natural but very wrong-headed road to go down. And very early on, Aristotle pointed out an alternative to it when he said that this extra something, whether we call it life or the soul, is not a substance, but it's the functional arrangement of matter. So he used the example of a candle. And he said, if you've got on the table a pile of wax and a string and a match, nothing happens and you can't use it for anything. But if you arrange the wax around the string and light it, you have a functioning candle and it will give off light. And that there's nothing added to the matter to turn it into a candle. There's no essence of candle anywhere. But the arrangement of wax and string enables it to function as a candle. And he said the soul is similarly the functional arrangement of matter so that it's living. Another example that was used to think about the nature of mind in this regard was the example of the university. And if someone comes to town and they want to visit Columbia University and you take them up to 106th Street and you walk through the gates there and you look at the McKean Mead and White campus and the low library and all the buildings and you show them the buildings and the campus, the student center one after another. And you'll point out every component. And they'll, at the end of the tour, they say, those are beautiful buildings. It's a wonderful place. But where's the university? See, and it's as if the university has some separate essence or nature other than all these component parts. Yet the university is simply a way that all those buildings are arranged and used to make a university. It's nothing that's added on top of them. Now, in Zen, and in a lot of religion, there's a great deal of temptation to see something behind the curtain, and to see the host or the eye or the light as something in the background that shines through. And yet, over and over again, what we have to do is find a way to see that it is simply, when we speak of the absolute, it's not something behind the scenes. It's a way of experiencing the scenes themselves. See, he has a particular quote of Buddha saying, I and all beings together attain enlightenment. Another version I talked about of this was where he looks at the star and he says, that's me. And there is a different kind of understanding, perhaps, of what he's realizing. I like to think of it as he sees the star as perfectly manifesting its nature over and over and over again as it twinkles, right? It's changing all the time and it's being a star and it's not having had to sit in the garden for 6 years immobile while birds put nests in its hair. The star is automatically perfectly a star. And he realizes in that moment that whatever he is, he's just like that star. He's manifesting, he's twinkling over and over and over again in every state, every thought, every feeling, every movement of his body is a twinkle like that star. Oh, that's me. That's exactly what I'm doing. Right? And for that kind of picture of Buddha's enlightenment, nothing changes, and yet suddenly everything is seen differently. And that, I think, is what we have to find our way to in these kinds of stories. What is the shift of perspective? That's not exactly a change in a state of consciousness that you get into and never leave, you see. It's not part of the idea of the twinkling, is that every changeable state is a perfect manifestation of who you are. It's not as if you've got to get into one particular twinkle and stay there, right? But this is always our temptation to think that that's what enlightenment means, that we're going to get into some state and stay there. And it's not going to ever get spoiled, right? Listen to what he does with this. Even so, I and together are neither one nor two. Now he says, essentially, on one hand, Your skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are all together, and the host inside is I. It does not have skin, flesh, bones, or marrow. It does not have gross physical, mental elements. Ultimately speaking, the next sentence he says that, ultimately speaking, which really here means on the other hand, if you want to know the undying person in the hut, how could it be apart from this skin bag? You see, on the one hand, skin, flesh, and bones are not I. On the other hand, if you want to look for I, where are you going to find it except in skin, flesh, and bones? Right? This is just like the university. Right? The campus, the library, the alumni hall, dormitories, they're not the university. But if you want to find the university, you can't find it anywhere except in all these buildings. Right? So you should not understand the beings on earth as distinct from yourself. While the seasons come and go and the mountains, rivers, and lands change with the times, you should know that this is Buddha raising his eyebrows and blinking his eyes. So it is the unique body revealed in myriad forms. It is effacing myriad forms and not effacing myriad forms. See, what is the relationship between forms and their twinkling, right? They're all manifesting. The twinkling is not simply the matter. It's the fact that we see that constant change as a perfect manifestation of something. But don't think that it's a something behind the scenes. It's not capital L life, you know, being injected into matter like electricity into the body of Frankenstein's monster, right? This is always what we're tempted to go, that something is behind and being injected into. And that we're going to somehow pierce the veil and get in touch with the pure essence, pure energy, the thing in itself, whatever, right? Nothing behind the curtain. It's just a curtain and it waves on its own. The ancient master Fayan said, "What effacing or not effacing can you talk about?" And Di Zhang said, "What do you call myriad forms?" So studying from all angles, penetrating in all ways, you should clarify Buddha's enlightenment and understand your own enlightenment. I want you to see this story closely and be able to explain it, letting the explanation flow from your own heart, not borrowing the words of another. This is very important, that you should clarify Buddha's enlightenment and understand your own enlightenment. I've said that the word enlightenment is like flypaper, and every crazy curative fantasy we have comes out and sticks to it, right? We have to clarify all the things we think enlightenment is. Right? It is terrible poison. We need to learn its nature. He adds a two-line verse at the end of this case, as he will in all the others, and he makes that point. One branch stands out on the old apricot tree. Thorns come forth at the same time. The thorns are all the things that are going to entangle you and stick you, right? As soon as we speak of the Buddha's enlightenment, everybody gets nuts. Can I get it? I want what he's having, right? We don't But the whole point of this story is to see you're twinkling, you're the star. Right? It's already happening. Try to clarify that point for yourself.